Talking about Predator.
Mm-hmm. Just talking about Predator.
Get to the chopper.
Oh, God.
There are a lot of lines that people remember from this movie.
A lot of lines people try to say because they think they can do a really funny Schwarzenegger accent thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most people are not as good at this as they would like to think.
I feel like you have some personal experience or story here.
Oh, just in college, I don't know if it was like this for your friends in college, but Predator fell into one of the ones that was entertaining to watch, and not just entertaining, but one that would basically almost always be on like TNT or whatever. So you'd walk in and it'd be on, or somebody would pop in the DVD fresh from the library. That was nice and everything, except for the part where afterwards people would just make the references to things that Schwarzenegger had said over and over and over and over and over again by trying to impersonate Schwarzenegger and just shouting "get to the chopper" over and over and over again between several people trying to outdo one another on their ability to say that as Schwarzeneggery as possible is unappealing to me.
Well, then, it's a good thing you're not a fan of death metal, because there is a band called Austrian Death Machine, which basically just uses goofy Arnold Schwarzenegger voice and quotes in, like, death metal songs.
Hmm.
Don't listen to it.
You know, I was going to say that was, like, the next thing on my queue, but I'll pass now.
Also, the singer guy is in jail for doing some bad things.
Well, go figure.
Yeah.
As we firmly established so far in the opening of this show, anyone who does really bad Schwarzenegger impersonations and quotes from him nonstop is a jerk. So, There we go.
The thing that I find interesting about that story is that you clearly spent a lot more time hanging out and with or around human beings in college than I did, because I don't have any similar stories, unfortunately.
Well, did you live on campus or off campus?
For 1 year, I lived on campus, and I didn't really
socialize.
Okay. Yeah, I played lacrosse and I watched a lot of TV.
Well, if it was up to me, I probably would have done less socializing, but because of the way that, you know, the school worked, you would have to have roommates for most of the configurations that were available to you for living on campus, and that, unfortunately, can pair you up with some unpleasant people, can also pair you up with people who you're totally fine with. So, yeah, you gotta take the good, you gotta take the bad, and the roommates are the ones you have. The roommates in your life.
That was a good song. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. It's no Austrian death metal, but it'll do.
Austrian death machine.
Oh. So it's not death metal?
It is death metal. It's the genre. The genre of music.
Oh, how silly of me.
Arnold is the Austrian death machine.
But are they Austrian?
The band? No.
Oh, okay.
But the songs are all called, like, Get to the Chopper and crap. Like, it's just, like, shouting in a fake Arnold voice.
That's awful.
It's not good, no.
So, did you go to a concert? Do you have a t-shirt? What happened here?
How did I become aware of it?
Yes. How were you lured into the orbit of this?
there was a band called As I Lay Dying that was relatively popular amongst the death metal listeners, and the lead singer of that went on to do Austrian Death Machine as a side project, which a guy I know bought the CD of and listened to and played it for me once, and I go, oh, okay, I get it. You can stop that now.
So were you also, in general, big into death metal back in the day?
For a period of time, yes.
Oh, did this overlap with your Limp Bizkit phase, or was that before?
No. This is more of a graduate level course. Limp Bizkit is more of a, like, an undergrad or a high school kind of thing.
So Limp Bizkit was the prereq.
It's kind of a gateway drug, yeah. Gateway drug to general douchebaggery.
Dan, I'm so glad I met you much later in life.
me too. Me too. Yeah, the lead singer of As I Lay Dying / Austrian Death Machine went to prison for trying to hire a hitman to kill his wife.
That's really disturbing.
Especially because As I Lay Dying kind of billed themselves as a Christian death metal band. Didn't work out super well there.
I'm going to move very quickly past this.
You asked for background.
I didn't ask for that part.
These are matters of public record.
That may be the case, but something content. This show is only about the most wholesome of content, directed by John McTiernan, who has a completely different set of personal problems in his life. Ongoing.
We generally like John McTiernan, mostly for The Die Hard, which came a year after this.
Yeah, see, the thing is, John McTiernan, he has really good qualities in some of the action directing components of his life, but other things about John McTiernan are less pleasant, like hiring people to illegally wiretap your business partner's phone and potentially maybe your wife's phone. That I don't even remember the details of that one, but it was a divorce, so I'm sure that was, you know, totally fine. Everything about John McTiernan is kind of a little weird. As we touched on when we had our episode on Die Hard a year and a half ago, and while I appreciate his films, he is certainly peculiar. And even though I like films like Predator, which was his first little directorial debut, they are not without their flaws, especially in terms of like women mostly running screaming and a lot of like men doing manly men stuff sometimes.
This movie has probably equal, I would say, more machismo than Top Gun, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think the mid 80s were peak machismo. This is an unpleasant time for many people. And it's one of those things where, sure, you've probably seen Predator and you've probably seen Top Gun, but if you go and watch them relatively close to one another, you're just like, ugh, I needed some sort of a palate cleanser, like get me out of here. But
something with some comedy or some characters or feeling or something.
Yeah. It's just, and they're still interesting and good movies. I'm not criticizing them as totally inapplicable for any kind of discussion, because obviously we wouldn't be talking about them otherwise. But they aren't without their faults. And this one, in terms of peak machismo, is helmed by probably the most machismo person I can think of, Schwarzenegger. Next to Stallone, maybe? Would you say they're tied, or would you say one is over the other? Like, Tom Cruise, I don't really think of as having any innate machismo. I think of him being inserted into machismo roles, like some sort of a building block, like a Lego.
I would give Schwarzenegger the edge, because I think he has some more natural machismo, and I think Stallone really is a bit affected in his attempts.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Schwarzenegger, while his acting improved later in his career, I would say, his ongoing career, especially in terms of certain commercial ads you might have seen for certain online mobile games, his acting might have improved over time, but back in the early 80s, there were some minor errors in his line deliveries every now and then on the appropriate emotion and intonation for the dialogue he was delivering. So this is one of those films that I find is somewhat affected by that.
Let's be real though. This movie could basically be watched on mute and would be exactly the same movie.
No.
I mean, aside from the music, of course.
Yeah, because this movie is 90% Alan Silvestri's Predator score. over and over and over again. Thumping, pounding in your brain.
When you pointed that out, I tried to, like, in certain instances where it was getting really crazy and I was noticing how crazy it was, I tried to imagine watching this without the music. Like, I would just watch the shot and it's like, wow, this would be really boring without music. So hopefully they had some sort of temp score in there when they were cutting. Otherwise, they probably would have thought this was going to be the worst movie they've ever made.
Yeah, this is one of those things that you definitely notice, especially when they're doing the montages and like preparing and walking through different areas of the jungle. And it's like, wow, there's a lot of very similar plants that I'm looking at over and over and over again. But
slow motion walking where they're just like moving through foliage and you've got dun, 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 dun. It's like these things combined together are very odd.
Yeah.
And I know it's not the same composer, but it really kind of reminded me of some of the same like tone as like Sneakers, like when he's doing his very slow walk through the heated room kind of thing.
Yeah, well, James Horner and Alan Silvestri are different and very notable entities. And James Horner, of course, doing the Sneakers score you're referring to. But they do like to just like pound you over the head, both of them, when you're listening to when there's some sort of a scene in a movie that could potentially be a vehicle for pounding you over the head. And it comes up every now and then, Predators, where you just have that big driving score pounding over everything else. There's not a lot of dialogue, so it's not an issue there. But yeah, it's one of those things where if you didn't like this score, there would be no way that you could watch this movie. I do happen to like the score, but yes, it is a touch on the bombastic side.
Yeah, so I will rephrase and basically say that if you took all of the words out of it, it would still be the same movie, which, you know, I think that's largely mostly people's memory of the movie, other than like, you know, like Arnold at the end there shouting, "Do it, kill me, what are you waiting for?" You know, trying to lure him into the trap like that. You know, that's very memorable and you need the words because that scene actually kind of has a point. And then, you know, how many times they talk about getting to the choppa.
We can discuss the plot holes around getting to that chopper later, but one other thing I want to mention is how difficult it was to make this film. Because
just looking at it, like, nothing about this movie looks like it was appealing to create, because it's like, wow, you're in a really dense jungle with cameras and people and crew, and it's like, what do? You like plop the camera in between some stuff and you have some people sort of like walk their way around through, but you can't like stage a lot of action and motion of characters and camera and stuff, because it's just like, well, there's trees and rocks and stuff.
Yeah, this apparently was a very big challenge for all parties involved to film, and it occurred at a few different, I think it was filmed in a couple different places in Mexico, but primarily in Puerto Vallarta, in sort of the jungle area there. And it was a physical challenge for the cast and crew, because even things like having to stand and deliver your dialogue on some sort of a sloping inclined plane and tree trunks and stuff, like after a while you start to not want to stand that way because it hurts. And they just had to muscle on through it. Speaking of which, everybody worked out all the time, apparently. So they did that.
Well, when your handshake is basically like a hovering arm wrestle game, yeah, everyone's going to be in shape.
Yeah, well, that is a ridiculous handshake. And they also have problems with the Predator, because you know who was going to be the Predator, Dan?
I do not. Who was going to be the Predator?
Can you name a European action star?
Dolph Lundgren.
Nope. Can you name another one? Go a little lower.
A little lower?
Yeah.
Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Yes.
For real?
Yes.
He's so tiny.
Yes. That was the problem that they realized when they started shooting, apparently. Because
did they actually get him all the way to the set?
Yes, and there was a different alien design that was less impressive than the Stan Winston design. That was apparently a note when they started production. Was like, hey, this isn't working out very well at all. So the alien that they had did not look intimidating, and it was also petite because John Claude Van Damme, no matter how you frame the shot, is not as big as Arnold Schwarzenegger or Carl Weathers or Jesse the Body Ventura or anybody else who's in the film. So it was not an effective use of him. He was also apparently very annoyed that nobody would see his face in the film, that he'd be inside of the costume the entire time.
Oh, the vanity of 80s action stars, huh?
Yeah, more like John Vanity Damme. No.
In the chat room here, I'm pasting a picture of the what I believe is the original Predator design, which is weird. I don't like it.
Oh yeah.
It's very clearly designed so a human-sized person could see out of the neck area.
It is bad. It is weird. It's like a some sort of a wolf ant skeleton thing. It's
kind of got like grasshopper legs too.
Yeah, praying mantis-y, I guess. But it has these weird fangs. It's not a good design, and it was not intimidating and did not work very well. But the whole thing
that made the Predator sort of intimidating in the first place is the fact that the scale, he's humanoid-ish, but he's like 9 feet, 10 feet tall. That's like one of the biggest things it's got going for it.
Well, yes, that's because Kevin Peter Hall is 7 foot two. So he's a very tall person.
Yeah. This movie, this is not really a movie without the Predator. I mean, this would have been gone to the sands of time, as it were, if it weren't for this actual design of monster and the size and all of that. Like, nobody would remember this movie at all, I'm quite certain, if it wasn't for the Stan Winston designed bad guy.
And Stan Winston apparently got the idea when he was sitting on a plane with James Cameron, and they were chit-chatting. Stan Winston was doodling, and James Cameron had mentioned how he'd always wanted to see something with mandibles, and hence the notable mandibles.
I heard that story somewhere. I'm trying to remember where.
Well, yes, I've also heard that too. Hmm. And I can't remember where either. But if anyone can find that, please relay it to us. But the thing was that after that was redesigned, the Predator was recast. They shot some stuff. They had the monkey in the red suit jump around. It all started to come together.
What is the red suit for? Is that for keying?
Yes, for keying. Because the jungle is green and the sky is blue. So how many other colors you got for film?
Well, let's see. There's a lot of colors.
There's three colors. It's film. It's additive. Three colors.
Yeah, I was wondering as I was scrolling through these Google image photos. There's this weird red suited thing with like a crab claw thing, which I think the red suit is the old monster design, isn't it?
No,
kind of looks like.
No, there were a lot of shots in here where you could see like the dreadlocks and stuff. It was not the same one, but. The basically they had the monkey for the shots where it was jumping through the trees,
because
as you might understand, not entirely possible for a 7 foot two human being to execute that maneuver.
So you're saying they actually dressed up a monkey in the red suit?
Yes, they dressed up a monkey in a red suit and had him jump in trees in the jungle. And you know, like the one where the Predator is basically like perpendicular to the tree trunk as he's like swinging around it. That one's totally a monkey shot. And so they would intermix those with the other ones where it was Kevin Peter Hall in a red Predator suit doing the stuff, and they would chroma key it, and then they would change the lens, and they would do the Predator effect.
They shoot it with a different lens. That's how they did it.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a cool effect.
It is, yeah. I mean, what about the like the multi-layered effect where it's kind of like
inside of itself?
Yeah, there's like a lot of different little goofy layers of it inside of itself.
I don't know how they wound up doing that, to be perfectly honest, because I didn't research it. I just know that they swapped lenses in order and did a second pass without the actor in order to get the sort of zoomed in look of it.
Hmm.
So I don't know if they just rotoscoped that and then offset it again inside of it, but that would be one alternative.
Oh, it did kind of look like a scale, didn't it?
Yeah. The effect is neat because it gives you that rippling look to it where it's not entirely invisible. And a lot of things where you would see invisible monsters in films like these in the 80s and earlier, what you would wind up seeing is nothing. And then things would just be moving around on camera and stuff because that was the technology that was available to you. Or people would have like something on top of a surface. And so they'd have it on wires and things moving around. So... Invisible
totally
things,
real.
Yeah. It's good that they came up with this effect, and they also had the predator vision, the heat vision, whatever it was, infravision. I want to say it was a video a technique that they were using, not infrared, other stuff. But it's cool, and that gives you a very characteristic element of the monster cam. Which is not
everything about this movie seems like the most ill-conceived film school student ideas. Like, we're gonna go out into the middle of the jungle and it's gonna be awesome. It's like, well, how are you gonna do that practically? We'll figure it out when we get there. How are you gonna have jumping from tree to tree? I don't know. We'll get a monkey and we'll dress him up.
Well, they okay. did. I mean, I get the sense that there was some trial and error because they did wind up reshooting a lot of stuff. Do you know what the blood is?
Oh, the glowy blood.
Yeah.
I don't know. What, they just like break glow sticks in half and dump it everywhere?
You are half right. You want to guess what the other half is? If it was a mixture and it was a broken glow stick, what else would be in it in the 80s for a monster effect?
Slime of some sort? I don't know.
You're closer.
Jello?
Colder?
I don't know. Can you tell me the answer?
Well, I will phrase it in the terms that Wikipedia uses, which is personal lubricant.
Oh, no. I guess that's one way to get a soluble, thicker solution.
Yeah, because it was for texture. That is the specific phrasing. For
sure,
texture.
To thicken it up a little bit.
Yeah, you need a nice viscous glow stick blood.
And you don't want it to be solid like fake blood, so you wouldn't want to put like cornstarch or something in it.
No. And it would also, I would imagine, dull the effect.
They could have just gone with, you know, Vaseline or something. But
No, it's the 80s. It was a monster. You had to use KY jelly everywhere.
Oh, dear.
And so those are characteristics of this film that are visually notable. Because you see them a lot in this film, and then often repeated in other films that try to harken back to Predator.
Yeah, the heat vision's rad. It's one of those things that, you know, once you figure out what they're doing, it's a very interesting sort of, you know, story element that only the Predator can only see body heat through that particular method, and he's got that very screwy vision when he takes off his mask at the end there, and how he uses that to his advantage, although... I did think it was a little goofy the way he discovered the covering himself with mud, and the fact that putting mud on yourself one time doesn't really block your body heat for hours at a time. So
no, especially not when you're like bleeding out of every pore and all of the cracked, caking dirt is mostly gone from you. Then yeah. That fight would have gone a little differently had that been slightly more accurate. But
you would have just waited till the mud warmed up a little bit and be like, there you are. Blast.
Yeah. I mean, he had like his wrists and stuff exposed when he was setting the traps later on because he had been running around this dried mud for several minutes. So it strains credulity, but you know what? It's a movie about an alien hunter from another planet who is after some U.S. Army guys who've gone on some sort of insurgence into territory that is controlled by bad guys of nondescript origin stuff. And there are rebels which are theoretically aligned with the U.S. in some way, but have nothing to do with this. And then there's some representative of a thing. Everything's everything's very confusing about the initial mission in here.
They use the hush-hushness of the CIA or the government to their benefit of sort of saying like, well, we can't really tell you what we're going in there for. Like a helicopter crashed and some of our guys were kidnapped and taken across the border, and we can't use diplomacy to get them back because they're in unfriendly territory. So we need the best army guys in the world to sneak in there real quick and blow them all up before anyone notices, and then bring them back. But that's not actually what happened. It was some other thing where some other people got captured, and then some military team that they sort of know went in there at first to get them, but
Hopper.
They didn't want to tell them that Hopper went in there first to get him out. Although I don't know why they're here. Green Beret is a good man. Didn't know that they were a separate thing in here for something.
Nobody told me.
Nobody told me nothing. He does the worst job of like, no, nobody told me anything.
I am Carl Weathers, and I am totally lying.
Yeah. That like even when they do their arm wrestle handshake, and he's like trying to hide stuff, you know, in his whole like I gotta go with you so we can help make decisions thing. Like he's not selling anybody, least of all Arnold Schwarzenegger, on the fact that he's not withholding information.
Yeah, he's totally withholding. You know,
for an old friend, like a big buff army guy, like he's pretty inept in the field, which I don't enjoy watching. Like, woman with zip ties on her hands with a stick gets the best of him a couple times.
Well, she did have some leaves, Dan.
Right, yeah, she played literal dead for a second and then threw some leaves at him and ran away.
Yeah, I mean, what was he supposed to do against those leaves? Now,
maybe it's just because he's a big American and she's smaller and more nimble through the trees.
Well, now you're just being sexist, Dan.
No, I'm I'm being sizist, if anything. Speaking of size, I love Shane Black's glasses in this movie.
Oh, they're huge. They're the biggest glasses. You know, now his character I find completely unappealing and repellent, but go figure. I forgot it was him.
I don't know why he has the lines that he does. It doesn't help him at all. It's kind of awful, but I just love that he is. He's Ramus from Stripes is what he is for me.
He is very, very Harold Ramis-esque, but it's mostly because of the glasses.
I know, the huge glasses, and he's got the same sort of, you know, shaped head and then the hat or whatever, but
and the smirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want some of those glasses.
Egon didn't smirk as much, but Ramus and Stripes smirked a lot.
Well, anyway.
Why do you want those glasses exactly?
I don't know, because I think it'd be hilarious to just bring back the gigantic 80s glasses. Also, like, what's her name in Top Gun? She had gigantic glasses and looked ridiculous.
I keep noticing you're saying looks ridiculous, and a shame it's not brought back. And I can't help but feel that maybe you're not making a connection here.
No, I want them because I take no issue with looking ridiculous.
So you're going to wear those ridiculous glasses with your Ripley's Reeboks that you're gonna buy?
Oh, I would absolutely do that.
Wow, what an outfit.
I just want the mid to late 80s style to just be, just combine all of the great icons, and then I'll just wear that around at all times.
That sounds bad.
I'll get a bomber jacket with like some fur around the collar to wear at the same time.
I don't think these are necessarily great tastes that go great together, so good luck. But anyway, so this movie, one thing we didn't mention is the very start of it has a dramatic and kind of shortish title of stars, and then the word Predator, and Arnold Schwarzenegger's name, and a ship. And the ship zooms by camera, don't really get a good look at it, and that little pod thing goes off, and then goes towards a planet of some kind of blue, kind of like a blue marble, kind of like a blue spot. and it's Earth.
I always like when they're rebellious and they do their space shots with the planet above. So you're not like going down to the planet. It's you reveal it by tilting up to it and you see the dark side of it.
Yeah, well, the dark side of it also plays a role in the shot, because then the camera pushes into the dark side and then that's our camera cut out of that shot. So
see, it all comes together.
Yeah, because otherwise you'd have to cut looking at the Earth, and now this way you can do something artsy. Now apparently that was by Dream Quest Images, you would probably remember for when we did our Total Recall episode.
I was gonna say, yeah, you brought that name up before.
Yep. They are defunct, but they did a couple things, and this is one of them. And that's all we see of the alien, and then we go into all of the military stuff with helicopters and Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers and General McGeneral guy. Don't even remember his name. Did he have a name? Was he a character?
General Phillips.
Ah, yes. General Homer Phillips, played by R.G. Armstrong, who could not look more like a general.
Yeah, totally. He's got, what has he got, like a paper hat on or something there? this movie suffers from a couple of issues, like sort of in the same way that Die Hard kind of starts with some slow montage-y bits of people getting into their positions around the building and places and what have you. People are doing stuff and they're not talking and we're seeing montages of stuff, but we don't really get a sense of who any of these people are by their actions. Or, I mean, there's only so much you can do with their dress when they're military folk, but you really don't learn much, if anything, about the characters other than, you know, we need the best of the best. That's why we called you guys in. And again, this is another one of those instances where I don't really know that he's going to go all the way to the jungle before he gets any sort of briefing on the topic, but whatever. He's going to have his briefing in the little bungalow where he meets up with Carl Weathers. But sure. All we know is that they work alone typically, and he doesn't like having to take Carl Weathers along with him, and they got to go recover some people, and they're the best of the best.
And they were old buddies, but he's in the CIA now.
Yeah, and he wears a tie with his short sleeve shirt.
Yep. So that's a look. Very tropical. And
well, it's Central America. What are you going to do?
Yeah. So then they head on out, and when they do that, we get this interesting series of shots where it's we're cutting from the outside of the helicopter flying through a valley, and then also the inside of the helicopter illuminated only by these red interior lights, and the guys prepping. It's very Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, it's very like we're all each our own individual awesome army guy. You got Jesse Ventura, which he shouldn't have been allowed to do anything at all other than this movie. Because this movie fits Jesse Ventura perfectly, you know, chewing tobacco and spitting on shoes and stuff. And then you've got Bill Duke there just putting on his makeup and being very quiet and staring and somber in the back there. And
Bill Duke is plays a kind of effective, creepy person.
Yeah, no, he's great in this role. He's not always used perfectly, but I think he fits this role quite well. Although, you know, some of the whole, like, you know, Jesse Ventura was my buddy and I'm going to start to get a little emotional when he dies kind of thing. That's a little over the edge for me for hardened military guys like that.
Yeah.
But of course, Jesse Ventura with his, I ain't got time to bleed. Like that's totally like a perfect military guy line.
Yeah. Now we're also introduced to Hawkins, who is Shane Black, as we found out when we watched the credits after the movie was over. And so Hawkins has his first of two awful jokes about his girlfriend, quote unquote. Something tells me he does not actually have a girlfriend, and it's bad. And
it seems like his only purpose in life, other than indiscriminately shooting people, is to try and make Billy laugh, which he succeeds on the second try, not the first try.
I don't know why, because neither of these are funny, but
it's to establish a relationship between the guys, right? You know, they have a rapport, and this is the thing that they do. Like, hey, we're jokesters. It's like, no, I don't know why you're saying these words. You should stop.
Yeah, no, this it is really off-putting. And also, unfortunately, Jesse Ventura, who would go on to do a lot of gay rights advocacy, drops the other F-bomb. in here. So that's never fun. But we also have Richard Chavez playing George Pancho Ramirez. And now I find that name, you know, that call sign is a little not politically correct. But hopefully George Ramirez, in the context of this fictional universe, was okay with it before he was killed. Because otherwise that would be rather sad.
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about, like, dancing the line amongst ping pong. Like, Billy is, like, the tracker. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's probably...
Doesn't really hold up these days.
No, yeah, it's a very G.I. Joe kind of 80s stereotype. We'll cast people in these sorts of roles that we imagine because we are white men writing things based on our...
He's got this genetic predisposition that he'll put his ear to the ground and figure out exactly how many people were here. There were 12 military guys all wearing American combat boots, and then whatever, followed by six other guys coming from that direction. It's like, I guess if he's supposed to be an expert tracker guy, then we're supposed to take some of that as his personal skill or whatever. But like, that's just like hand waving about how we're supposed to figure out which direction we're going to go to find our people. So. It's not great.
No, it's really not. And I would like to imagine in some way, if this movie were to be done in a more modern era, that maybe somebody wouldn't make that mistake. But we are, after all, in a nondescript 80s jungle in South America doing illegal army stuff because that was the genre of the era. And
it was the style of the time.
Oh god, it's an awful style, worse than his glasses.
The style is shoot everything and blow everything up and stuff.
Yeah, so they quickly find
there's essentially no plot to this movie.
No, I mean, I could summarize the plot right now. They find a helicopter, they find the people are dead in it, they go to the campsite base thing, and they find that it's a hut and some stuff and a truck thing, and then Schwarzenegger lifts up the truck thing, blows up the hut thing, and they all kill everybody there. No losses.
Well, don't
on
forget
their
the helicopter
side.
Guys, they found a few of them hung upside down with their skin cut off of them.
Yes, that is our first clue. Something's up.
Savages or something.
Yeah, because they think it's the bad guys, the nondescript Central American bad guys, and so they kill everybody inside of the camp. Because a hostage had been executed. Apparently, he was the last hostage because there weren't any more. Either that, or maybe he blew them all up when he set that truck thing towards the main building. But whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting that the best of the best army group, it's not the ones who can like sneak in undetected and really quietly do the job and then get back out without being noticed. It's basically the guys who can carry the most grenades and claymores and or like grenade launchers attached to their machine guns.
Also have no problem just murdering everybody in sight.
Because that's all they do. Yeah, they shoot a lot of grenades out of their rifles and throw a lot of grenades and then just machine gun basically all the people that it missed.
Yeah, because you'd be like, oh, self-defense. It's like, I guess, except for the part where they, like, murdered everybody. Like, but like, no one's left alive except for Anna. Coincidentally, the only female presence in the entire film. She's the Smurfette of this movie.
God, it's a horrible way to say it.
Well, I feel bad because it's like, what? How could you write a whole movie and the only person that you have in it that's not a man is this character played by Anna, and that's it.
Well, they needed somebody who was objectively an innocent that the predator wouldn't kill, because the predator only kills other predators, people with guns and stuff. And since she was just sort of a captive and non-threatening because she's a tiny, weak woman or whatever, the predator doesn't even bother trying to kill her.
Yeah, well, it was...
I mean, I don't think they could come up with another way to make that read on screen. Like, unless they found, like, a kid or something, and then the predator just like, well, I'm not going to kill you because you're a kid and you're harmless.
They could do it like World War Z, and it'd be like, oh, that person's sick, I'm not going to kill them.
Well, you know, they were trying to...
Spoiler alert for World War Z.
Yeah, well, I... Ugh. You know, at the end of the movie, I do think they kind of make a good turn into that sort of like King of the Jungle style battle where it's like, I'm here for the fight. It's not about necessarily killing people. It's like, you know, who's the king of the hill kind of stuff. That's why he, you know, he takes off his mask and he goes hand to hand combat when he still has his laser and he doesn't really need to do that. It's just about like, well, we're the last ones. You're the tough one. I'm a tough one. Let's have it out or whatever. And in the best way possible. And you do get the sense that, you know, in the same way that the military guys have their like, quote unquote, honor of like, that's not an honorable way to like die or whatever and be strung up there. Like the Predator clearly has his sort of rules about how he likes to fight and why he likes to fight. And I think they did an okay job of sort of doing the one-on-one battle at the end there. But like, you know, as we're going through the bits where it's supposed to be like, well, why won't he kill the woman, or why is he just immediately killing and stealing these dead bodies as his prizes for these other guys? You know, some of that stuff is a little foggier.
Well, also, since they tried to communicate at a couple points that he was taking the bodies, he was taking trophies, but he doesn't always take the same consistent trophy from every single person, because the first guys we find are skinned and hung up. They still have their bones and skulls and everything. And then later on, he's collecting skulls, except he uses his shoulder rifle, plasma rifle cannon thing, to blow up Mac's head, which is remarkably not very blown up in the next shot where he looks at camera dead.
Well, the liquid came out, but the structure is still there.
Yeah, it's like when you put a little pinhole on the top of an egg, and then you drain out the egg for decorative purposes. That's exactly what happened.
It seemed like, at least in the Mac instance, like Mac was sneaking up on him, and you know, I can't remember if he was wounded at that point or whatever, and he was tracking him. But yeah, he just like, well, I ain't got time to deal with you. I just got to kill you and move on. But yeah, like the I think they do, you know, they do a better job of honing in on that stuff in like the second and the subsequent movies where they have their sort of collection of skulls and or spines and what have you. For just like their prizes. But yeah, it was, I guess, to sort of throw people for a loop, like, you know, why are these bodies skinned and like brutally murdered, and then like why are there just like guts here and there? Like, is it just some sort of like animal that's just dismembering people? But then why are they tied up? Is it is it the rebel guys, or what's going on here? But like, yeah, I think the keeping a prize thing is an important part. And I don't know, if it's a different piece from a different person, like you would think it would be, you know, I'm going to keep Carl Weathers' giant arm that I blasted off because he's got a big buff arm. And I went to like, look how big this buff arm is that I blew off, even though it had.
Maybe his plan was he was going to pose it with Arnold Schwarzenegger's arm that he was going to planning on capture and go over his mantle. Now
he's going to grasp their hands together above his mantle, like crossed swords.
Yeah, you know, like all the people who do creepy taxidermy poses and stuff? You know, where they set up dioramas?
I don't know that I've seen a taxidermy diorama, but I can imagine what it is, and I don't really want to.
Listeners, send Dan really disturbing photos. Don't send them to me. I'm good.
Please don't.
Send
them to Dan.
but yeah, so there are people who do that. And the whole thing here is just like it's not consistent. Now, at first, it's excusable because we don't know the pattern, and then it's building up the tension. It just seems unusual at first because you also don't even see the Predator. The first time we see Predator vision is 19 minutes into the film. Still have not seen him anywhere. Yeah. Not even Predator effect. The first time we see the Predator cloaking effect is 42 minutes into the film. And then the first time we see the Predator decloak and all that jazz is when he is fixing his leg wound, and that's 53 minutes into the film. And then, the final battle is when he finally takes off his helmet, and that's like, I think, 90 minutes in, an hour and a half into the film. That's a really unusual pacing to build this tension of this reveal.
It's perfect. Love it.
Yeah, well, I also agree with you, But apparently I was reading some of the historical documents on movie criticism about this when it was released.
Historical documents?
Yeah, everybody said it was a derivative and that the tension didn't work and that special effects were substituted for suspense. So, you know, movie critics back in the 80s really did not like this film.
Special effects ruining movies. No, I thought it was great. I admire the restraint. That's exactly what you want. Like you want to build suspense from the unknown, and this would probably be a much better movie to watch if the predator animal was not as widely known as it is in just today's general culture. From I don't know what, just it's everywhere now because it's iconic. But if people hadn't seen it before, like that reveal would be quite impressive, I think. And, you know, the suspense, you don't need to know what it was. Maybe, you know, some of the hints here and there, like when you see it fixing the leg wound at that first part there, where you just see the giant claw hands and how it's kind of humanoid. It's like, whoa, that's kind of creepy. And I don't know what this is. And it's freaking me out a little bit. But, you know, the other part that I wanted to bring up about not really obeying, not really being clear about what the rules are or the pattern, that whole speech that the lady gives there, I forgot her character name, Anna.
Her extreme rack focus exposition.
Well, the thing about, like, you know, in our hottest summers or something is when it happens, and it was a real hot summer this summer. It's like, what is that? So you're saying it's weather-based? Like, the meteorologists from space are, like, looking through the telescope down to Central America going, like, well, it's warm enough to go down there now because we have unusually cold blood and we need to be warm down there or something.
He's a space snowbird. He is a retiree from another planet going on safari. And
That's way too apt, apparently,
because they drop him off and they're gonna pick him up and take him home. He's not moving in, you know. This isn't he's not moving down to Florida, Dan. He's just renting.
Well, this jungle timeshare. This jungle is his summer home, and then it just happens to be in a climate that he enjoys. But for some reason, this particular jungle is just full of bad guys doing bad stuff with, you know, machine guns and junk, and like they won't get off his lawn or whatever. So he's got to skin him and string him up at his property line. So the next people coming in see him and go like, no, don't come past here.
It's an interesting fencing idea.
Well, it's like, you know, when you like kill a bug and then you like leave it there and you go like, now all your friends can see this and get the hint.
Moving past that. Speaking of killing bugs. One of the interesting aspects of the pattern is the scorpion, which I am led to believe you are quite familiar with. Do you get scorpions that big inside of your house, or are they the tinier scorpions?
They're generally a little bit smaller than that. When they lay their tail out straight, they're probably about 4 inches, not like six. But yeah, we found there was one in the front room of the house 2 days ago, and there was one like right inside the edge of the garage like 4 days ago. I don't know, they're getting a little more brave now that the weather's changing, moving around and stuff.
Now, the reason I bring up the scorpion shot and the pattern thing is because Mac kills the scorpion that's on Carl Weathers' back with a knife, and then strips it off with his boot onto a crate. And when they leave, and the predator is going through the camps, going through the destroyed site, and looking at the work that the guys had done, he goes right up to the scorpion, picks up the scorpion, not any of the other dead people, just the scorpion, picks up the scorpion, holds it in his hand, and then you see its warmth slowly drain away from it until it turns black. And it's just like, so is he like, oh no, my cousin? Like, what is the sentiment that he's expressing here with the scorpion?
You know, I think, at least for me, it's sort of reading as, like, I'm an alien. I don't know how any of this stuff works down here on Earth, so I'm just here scoping it out. And look at all these funny-looking animals. And, you know, because, again, with, like, the recording and the re-echoing of the voices and the dialogue and the laughter and stuff, most of that, it just reads as, like, him trying to analyze humans and the animals around him and stuff. And, I guess, well, I mean, again, looking forward to the second movie, maybe this is this particular Predator's first time down on Earth, right? You know, despite the fact that we are led to believe that this is a multi-year or an ongoing thing. It just read as like, hey, whoa, what is this thing here? This is crazy looking. Although, you know, scorpions don't really have body heat like that.
No, nor would they like have the heat drain out of them to the point where they would turn black in the Predator's hand. They would just become the color of the Predator's hand because they would be matching the temperature of it's about osmosis when you get down to it.
It would be matching the temperature of a boot, basically, but it's fine, whatever.
Yeah. So anyway, like we said, this movie can be quickly summarized because once they blow up this campsite, then it's just about walking to where they can get extracted. And they can't get extracted because it's too hot, because there's too much stuff going on. It's like, from what?
Yeah, they're in too far. They got to make it to Sector Alpha Bravo 1 or 9 or 7, something, something.
Yeah, you got to make it to MacGuffin border land. And so they...
10:30 hours, expect to pick up.
Yeah, that's another question I have. And so they start going off, and at this point, nobody has suffered any... thing really, except for Jesse Ventura got a minor flesh wound, and there's the process of slowly picking them off one by one here with was it Hawkins that goes first, right?
Hawkins goes first.
Yeah, poor Shane Black,
because he's watching Anna, and Anna escapes, and he goes running after. And then he uses that opportunity to get him off away from the rest of the pack, and then stab him with his double claw hand thingamabobber.
Yeah, no more Christmases for Shane Black, and he's out of the picture.
Is this finally a Shane Black movie that doesn't take place in Christmas?
I suppose. And your use of the word "finally" is curious, considering it was released in 1987. But so
he didn't write this one, so. I guess it doesn't count.
They have the whole thing where she goes back and she explains and like, hey, stuff. And then there's more stuff that happens and more people start dying and there's blood.
Were we supposed to find some sort of significance in the reveal that she does speak English and just was like pretending to not speak English most of the time?
No, I think they wanted, I think they wanted to have it so that it would be more convincing if she didn't immediately speak English, but at the same time, her fluency poses a problem in that if she was really at all concerned and worried for herself, that maybe she would have tried to bargain for her life or communicate stuff about the creature in the English language earlier in the film. It seems like it was poorly timed to coincide with her trusting them, which is... Yeah. Different from her ability to use the language to her benefit, which
it's all name, rank, and serial number until they're all gonna die because there's a predator out there, and then she goes like, "Okay, guys. By the way, I speak English pretty well the whole time. I just didn't want to work with you guys, but now that it seems we're all gonna die, we should like talk and stuff."
Well, no, but she was talking to them in Spanish about the creature too, so she
was trying to keep it minimal, just sort of like, "Oh, the jungle came alive" or whatever. But yeah. she totally should have. Broken that, but as soon as she saw a giant cloaking thing with a sword sticking out of its arm kill Hawkins.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, when she does speak English, it's like, and let me tell you in English the complete story about hot summers and aliens.
What was it called? And what it means is the demon that cuts people's skins off or something? I don't know.
It's very hand-wavy and convenient for them, and at the same time being very folksy about a local area of wherever this is supposed to be in Central America.
At least she didn't call it like El Chupacabra or some like local name or whatever that has been passed down through the ages.
That would have been bad too. So everybody starts getting slowly picked off until we are left with Mac, Billy, Carl Weathers, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Anna. And they are, Ramirez. And so Ramirez is injured from a previous thing, and they're going to leave him, and there's the stuff from the camp, and, oh, what do? We got to get to the chopper. And, you know, all this stuff, and...
Their priorities are weird, because it bounces between, like, let's fortify ourselves within a little area and set up traps and stuff and see if we can catch this thing, to let's run as fast as we can to where we're going to get picked up, and then it goes like, well, let's hang out for a little bit and, like... try and kill it again, and then, like, you know, Mac gets it, and Dylan loses his arm, and then it's like, well, we should probably run again now, because we're not, our traps aren't working out super well.
No. The Carl Weathers arm shot is pretty effective, except for the part where it keeps shooting, because there's no weight put on the trigger at all, but...
you can kind of see the finger's not really on the trigger, but it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, it was B for effort. So they have... them die, and then Billy's like, I'm gonna make a final stand on this log, and I'm gonna strip down just using this machete, and unfortunately it takes one of those weird turns, like so many other things, where it's just like, yeah, the deep connection to, you know, the life force of the earth and hunting and stuff is what's going to drive me forwards in this case, because I am of, anyway, it's poorly conceived. And
yeah, there were like two ways to look at that. Either he is actually terrified, like so scared out of his mind, and he's just kind of like lost it, and like, you know, says, you know what? I'm not going any further. I'm just going to like try and make a stand here. Or the other is that, like, he's going for the whole, like, honorable death thing. And he's like, face me one-on-one. Let's go, bro. I got my sword and I took my shirt off and stuff. And let's fight. Which, you know, I feel like, and they certainly would nowadays, like, they could have done a little bit more to, like, set up that one-on-one battle before they cut off back to the other guys who just hear a scream in the distance. Like, the scream in the distance was fine when you hear Carl Weathers die and stuff. But I kind of wanted to see... Billy and the Predator at least like standing sort of up on that log, like sizing each other up. So that would be another instance where you could kind of get the scale comparison between the two, because you don't really get a ton of the like how tall is the Predator stuff until like way later at the end of battle. But that would have been a cool, just like see them stare at each other for a moment and before the battle starts, and get some intimidating Predator looks, either with the cloaking or like turn it off temporarily kind of thing, and then cut to, you know, screaming because he dies very quickly kind of thing.
I think it was supposed to communicate that he was not a match, and that it wasn't going to be a mano a mano fight. He hadn't earned that, and that he was just, you know, he was just a person who was trying to act as if they were on an equal footing, and so the Predator just offhandedly kills him for that, I guess, presumptuousness or something.
Yeah, I guess. He was the only one to really see him, though.
Yeah, that's how I would interpret the direction, what they're trying to communicate by not showing any of it. Because all of the other times that the Predator had gone up against any of the other commando guys, what had happened was we saw several shots of them fighting or reaction shots, the weapon tracker stuff, something. And with Billy, you don't get anything. So I would assume that it's meant to communicate that his course of action was just kind of dumb.
Oh yeah, his course of action was totally dumb. He should have been killed quickly and immediately. I just would have liked to see a little bit of, like, you know, they try and do a little bit of like Predator cam, like coming up over the rock as he's like approaching Billy. I would have just liked to see like one wide shot of the two of them sort of standing there, like, you know, facing each other, and then like, okay, now you can move on, because we've established that this is... one of them thinks it's a duel, and the other one is basically just climbing up on top of a rock, and then it's like, yeah, you're done.
Well, it's just curious, because when we discussed Aliens last week, and there was the few scenes of the alien making its way inside of the dropship and killing the pilot, you felt like all of that didn't need to be shown, that we could have just seen the dropship go off course.
So, well, we cared way less about the pilot of the dropship than we cared about Billy. Billy was
like family to you?
Yeah. Billy was a flawed character, but he was the only one sort of treating the situation with some of the gravity that it probably deserved, rather than just sort of like, yeah, we're macho commandos, we'll kill whatever. He was the one who was like, guys, there's something up there and I'm freaked out.
Well, he was the only one treating it like with the gravity it deserved until he threw away all of his stuff and then stood on a log with a knife. Up until that point, yes. But after that point, no. He was not treating it with the gravity it deserved. Immediately after Billy dies, the Predator kills Ramirez, who they'd been carrying because he had been wounded. This just leaves Anna and Schwarzenegger. And Schwarzenegger goes to shoot him, the Predator, and Anna goes to pick up a gun. He's like, no, don't do it, because he had the weird speech about how he had intuited from the course of events in this film somehow that having a weapon would mean that she would be considered prey or something. It's weird.
Yeah, there's no sport or whatever he says.
Yeah, there's literally nothing to justify his assumption in this film at all, other than the fact that Anna does survive, but that could have just been coincidence. But
we needed a scene similar to the way Hawkins dies. Like, maybe after he hopped down behind Hawkins and like stabbed him through the chest, we should have had a moment where like the Predator kind of like locked eyes with her and then just sort of assessed her and then walked away, because that would give us a little bit more of the hint of like, oh, you're not a threat, I can move on now. But we just get that bad line from Schwarzenegger, like, oh no, you weren't armed, that's why he didn't kill you. It's like, well,
yeah,
okay.
Thanks. Yeah, I agree. And so then he's like, get to the chopper, etc., because Schwarzenegger's been injured. She runs away.
You want to try that again and actually pronounce it?
Nope.
Correctly?
Nope. You want to do it? You want to be that guy?
No, I don't. It's just in the chat room there. They keep spelling it properly. There's no R in choppa.
No, there isn't. It's choppa. But so anyway, he jumps off a waterfall.
Kind of accidentally. He's like running and slips and goes, oh no, look, there's a waterfall, and then there's another waterfall after the waterfall, and I'm all the way down here, and yeah, boy was that exhausting. I'm climbing up onto the muddy bank of the little
but before we get to the muddy bank, I just want to say those waterfall shots look terrible, and yeah, they look really bad. And so
why do they look so bad? They just have really, really long lenses that were just really muddy looking.
Really, really long lenses, and I believe they were shooting shooting slow motion for these, so that they could get slow motion shots of Arnold Schwarzenegger entering waterfalls, I suppose. And so I'm assuming they're using different film stock for that, or something about the way they crank it or something. But it also seemed like it messed up with however they decided to pull focus, because there was no focus on one of those shots, and they still ran with it.
Well, it just looked like a crazy blow up. Like, maybe they tried to do a post blow up because they realized you couldn't see what was going on.
Well, there was also a post blow up with a weird move for one of them, where it's a slow mo shot of him going down the waterfall, but then the camera moves in a very linear tracking fashion, almost like pan and scan on TV. It's awfully strange, but. Anyway,
the moral of the story is don't go shooting waterfalls.
No. Listening to the Predators and the Prey that you're used to.
Oh, that was good. If I had a bell, I would ring it.
So you said muddy shores.
Yeah, he crawls up onto the muddy shores and he looks like he's about to pass out and take a nap right there in the mud, even though it doesn't look like he can breathe. And then, sploosh right behind him. Something lands in the water, even though you can't see it. I think that one they did, they didn't do the Predator effect the first time. They just like threw some rocks in to make the splash, and then eventually they cut back to the Predator and did the, oh no, my electric cloaking device is malfunctioning in the water. I have no idea what's going on.
Well, the problem was he had a headphone jack, which interfered with the water resistance.
Yeah, see, you get rid of that headphone jack on your Predator, and then you can add those extra rubber seals, and then it's water resistant.
Yeah, wasn't it IPV6 certified?
Sure. Mm-hmm. But he sort of army crawls his way out of the lake there, and he's super tired, so he's climbing through the mud and plops himself against the tree in this very sort of odd fashion where it looks like he's going to like do a pull-up or something. Maybe that was just to sort of like break up the like chat, the shape or the pattern of his body, so it wouldn't be quite as recognizable. But I don't really know why he did that. He just sort of propped himself up against the tree in a weird way. And then the predator walked around and he shot a laser blast at a log because there was like a possum in it or something. And he couldn't see Arnold, who was just being real still. And then he comes to the bright conclusion after he touches his chest that, oh no, he couldn't see me because I have mud on me.
Yep. Exactly.
Which is, you know, that goes into his plan as we go towards the final battle scene of the movie where he sets up a bunch of traps. He calls out the predator. He says, come at me, bro. He's got his fire stick there that he throws down, makes a giant blaze and screams real loud and, you know, calls him over and says, like, let's fight. And he covers himself in mud so he can be secretive and hiding. And he climbs up real high in a tree and he holds up. He hugs the tree real tight so he like blends in or something. And then the predator like lands right behind him and starts climbing down the tree towards the fire. And he's like, oh, dude, can't move. But I got to do like a Tarzan to swing over to another tree and then grab onto that and hug it real quick so I don't move. So he doesn't see me. And I can get a good view on him. And the predator walks out on that log over top the fire. And he's just like looking at the fire like an idiot for some reason. And oh, by the way, Arnold Schwarzenegger made a homemade bow and arrow. And then
that was in the montage that went on entirely too long.
The montage, and he used some twine or some vines or something to tie a 40 millimeter grenade shell to the end of his bow and arrow, which when he fires it at the predator just drops like after 5 feet because it's so heavy. It just looks so cheesy, but it blows up right in front of the predator and freaks him out and stuff, and he just starts spinning around and laser blasting trees all around him, which eventually works because he like blows the tree up and Arnold falls down and stuff.
Yeah, but the explosion so close to the predator had injured the predator and also damaged the cloaking equipment so much so that the creature had to turn it off. And so he's walking around without the expensive effect. And they start going playing a little cat and mouse here where it's like, ooh, who's hunting who now? Because there are all these traps, but he's not going through the traps the way you want. And, oh, look, there's all this blood here. I bet I can go in and after him in this cave. Oh, wait, there was a hole in the top of this cave. He might have doubled back. Oh, no, I was the one who was in the trap all along. It's fun.
It's who's the hunter and who's the hunted. And it's alpha against alpha. And it's, King of the Hill kind of thing. And who's going to come out victorious? Who's going to be the baddest of the animals or whatever?
Yes. Yes. Who's
going to
be
survival of the fittest? Which is the fittest? Is it going to be the gigantic predator with his weaponry and claws and stuff? Or is it going to be the crafty human who built traps and stuff in the jungle?
Yeah, well, you see, the thing is, Arnold Schwarzenegger is really known for his intelligence in constructing rudimentary traps in the jungle out of vines and twigs and leaves.
He is the best of the best when it comes to military tactics, so
he
got a book or at least some sort of like leaflet that he carries around that's got like how to build like a little stick kind of thing that will stab a predator.
The only way I can imagine that he did any of this with this degree of confidence and competency is that he had been in situations analogous to this before where he would have had to do these things, because otherwise it seems like he's making a lot of risks with any of these traps that they would work at all. Because I don't know about you, but I'm not an expert trap constructor when I'm even using the best equipment, let alone like vines and some logs and stuff.
You're not. I never would have guessed.
No. I mean, I am an apex predator in that I am a human being on the planet Earth, but my hunting grounds were the Whole Foods market, where I kind of wandered around a little bit until my laser vision decided, salmon's fine. I guess I'll go with the farm-raised Atlantic over the wild caught. And then so I selected my prey, and I got that, and then I brought it home, and I roasted it in the oven a little bit. No trophy, though. Because that's gross, and I threw out the salmon skin. You don't want the salmon skin, but you got to leave it on so that it cooks in one piece and doesn't fall apart. Predator tip,
sure. Getting back to the jungle warfare stuff, I think it's potentially safe to say that based on age and type of character that Arnold is, that jungle warfare would be a thing that he is familiar with. Don't they say, what do they say when they're earlier in the movie? They're talking about how there's some bad jungle here, whatever makes something look like Kansas. What did he say? Like Cambodia look like Kansas. It appears they have some history with jungle warfare. And of course, you know, we've very publicly fought some battles in jungles where we did not know what we were doing.
No, horrible things. But his confidence with any of these traps, and that they all work except for the ones where the predator had dodged it. Like literally every single one of these works. And it's just like none of these are like, oh, whoops, you didn't whittle this enough. No, it's like, nope, everything's fine.
That's why in Predator 2, when he comes back, he's got more than just heat vision. He's also got, you know, potentially something that'll show like sharp stick vision, so he doesn't have to like get too close to the sharp sticks.
So we'll get to that. But they finally face off enough where Arnold is able to do enough damage to the Predator and hit him with that log. First he takes off the mask and, you know, says, you know, you're one ugly blump bleepity bleep. And then they have their final fight and he crushes them with a log. And then there's an exchange of, you know, what the bleep are you and what the bleep are you. And, you know, these guys should be nicer to one another is all I'm saying. And
He thinks he won, but then it's moving. But then he gets up to see it and like to kill it with a rock. And it's basically dying and bleeding everywhere. And just the logs on it's just not dead yet. And he's like, you know, well, we're both combatants and stuff. And I'll give you an honorable death. I won't just crush your head under this log like an animal or something. So,
yeah, it's like Captain Kirk and the Gorn.
No. No, I won't kill you. Maybe you thought you were protecting yourself when you attacked the outpost. No, I won't kill him. Do you hear? You'll have to get your entertainment someplace else.
Totally, sure, exactly like that. Same fighting style and everything. I must have missed the part where Arnold did the thing where he like grasps his two hands together into like one big fist and hits it into the back of it. But it's probably in there somewhere. But he's gonna be nice and let the Predator, you know, like not crush his head or whatever, or maybe let it live or something. Who knows what his plan was at that point? Maybe it was to just interrogate it and say like, "What are you?" But the Predator is like, "Totally dying here, bro, because I'm coughing glowy blood on my face. So I'm just gonna hit some stuff on my wrist here, and then you're basically gonna figure out from these beepy noises and the graphics on my thing that are getting smaller and smaller, this stuff's probably gonna blow up here."
I think you're referring to LEDs that you could buy at Radio Shack.
Sure. Well, I mean, they basically took like the outline of numbers that you would see on a clock and then did the inverse of those and highlighted all the other ones. But it was pretty clever. You know, it's alien language and stuff from Radio Shack.
Yeah. And you know, it's iconic enough that they totally copied this 100% for use in Mortal Kombat 3.
Finish it. Fatality.
Remember that video game? Remember Cyrex and
Cyrex? And what was the blue one named?
Well, the blue one, he was kind of like purpley, I think. That was Smoke, and there was
that's right.
The red one. Cyrex was the yellow one. The red one
was the yellow one. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember. I just remember them as ketchup and mustard. They lifted some aspects of that, especially the finishing move of blowing himself up from this. He sets the little thing and starts laughing like crazy. And it fades to the laughter of Billy from earlier in the picture when Hawkins had made Billy laugh. The big boisterous laugh that Billy had.
Thank you.
And then there's just some Jacob's ladders up the trees with some optical lightning stuff, and then sparks and things, and then shockwave, and cutaway to helicopter, which is still circling after another day, apparently.
Well, maybe, what did he say? Is it 10:30 hours? So that's 10:30 in the morning?
I was assuming so, because I thought she got to the chopper at 10:30 in the morning, because otherwise, what was she doing exactly? Because it was ready to pick them up. And so she was in that chopper, but then he was down in the jungle all day and into the night, and at least until sunset had occurred for several hours. And the chopper was just circling overhead until the next morning, because it was pretty light out by the time they actually landed. So there was a helicopter just circling overhead for almost 24 hours ish, like 20 hours.
It was the next day that the chopper was coming, and she got on around daybreak, and then there was a nuclear explosion, and they flew towards the mushroom cloud, which is always advisable. And then they saw Arnold standing there in the smoke, and they're like, well, I guess we should pick him up too.
Yeah, none of this is radioactive. And they took...
We don't know.
they took Arnold back, and he's all covered in dust and limp and shocked and traumatized from his experience. And that's the end of the picture. Helicopter and cue the music.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's an iconic movie, especially because of the monster. You've got your sort of, are we top of the food chain kind of storyline, man versus alien. And it's very sort of, you know, the honor of battle kind of thing, set in the jungle, which is a disadvantage for basically everyone, kind of the predator at points too. I guess it's probably not really a disadvantage for the predator, because his home world is very, jungly like, which, God, let's not do that movie. Oh, you still haven't seen that one, or you're still not familiar with that one, are you? Predators, plural?
I didn't even look it up after we talked. All I know is what you told me.
It's not good.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Well, is it worse than Predators 2?
Predator 2?
Yes, that's the one.
Much, much worse. Much worse. What's wrong with Predator 2? You got Danny Glover in there. He's getting too old for these aliens.
I still haven't seen any Lethal Weapon movie.
Are you kidding me? You've never seen any of the Lethal Weapon movies?
None of them.
See, I want to yell at you, but they've been ruined by literally every other movie that's ever come out that has completely ripped them off.
Yeah, well, see, that's why I feel like I'm mostly not in a rush, because
if you want some like
kind of happened.
Really dated saxophone music as like your movie score, and Danny Glover also wears some gigantic, horrible looking 80s glasses at one point, and then you've just got, you know, the gritty streets of LA and everything that it entails, and what's his name? Gary Busey's in there, right?
Sure.
You should see it. I bought Lethal Weapon on iTunes not too long ago, because it was only like $4 or something, and I was like, "Whoa, can't pass that up." It's a great movie.
Okay.
I mean, it has been tarnished by a number of things over the years, not the least of which is Mel Gibson himself. But it's a good movie.
Okay. Duly noted.
Is there a rebellious cop month of the year that we could use it as a themed movie for?
I don't know, but we can always designate one.
Hmm. Hmm.
Oh, the calendar is our oyster, Dan.
Doesn't play by the rules month.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if we were to strictly go off of when we did Beverly Hills Cop, which would be our cop who doesn't play by the rules month, then we'd have to wait like almost a year in order to do that.
Next August.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But there's nothing stopping us because we didn't declare it then. So we can do whatever we want. It can even be a biannual event.
Sure.
The biannual buddy cops.
Biannual buddy cops. That's good. It's almost mm-hmm. alliteration.
Not really, because they're not even similar sound. Okay.
So, do you have a thought on which alien you like better, this one or the one from the movie we watched last week?
I'm confused. You mean, do I like the design of the aliens in Alien, or do I like them in the narrative sense, or do I like what is it about them?
I need a primary judgment first. Just which one do you like better? If you had to pick, if you had to do an alien draft, let's go all incomparable and go alien draft. Which one would you pick over the other?
I mean, that's hard because they're so dependent on the stories that they're inside of, and they are especially tarnished when they are together.
I was going to say, who'd win in a fight? Let's not
yes.
do.
Yes. Exactly that.
I was specifically trying to avoid the who would win in a fight thing.
Yeah, well, you know, they gather and they hunt in a very cold area where there's this underground Mayan temple thing, and there are these chains which pull the thing, and they thaw it, and they have to... Yep.
Every so many years and stuff, they come down and things... Every 17 years for 17 days, it gets to eat or whatever.
Yeah, dear. So anyway, to answer your question, I prefer the Alien franchise to the Predator franchise. So I think I prefer the aliens to the Predators.
Is that like a futuristic kind of thing, though? Because you can't deny that the Alien franchise has some awesome futuristic production design and ideas and stuff. And yes, high top sneakers as well, so...
Well,
I'm just saying, I don't see Reebok reissuing Arnold Schwarzenegger's footwear from this movie.
No, I definitely think it has a much bigger impact than this one did. And besides, I would like to save this. I would like to table this discussion for next week.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because that is the first time that we see photographic evidence that it's supposed to tie these two universes together, even though... Stan Winston's like, I did it on a lark or whatever. Like, it wasn't meant to be some hard and fast linking of the universes.
It's like, well, I mean, hate to break it to you guys, but the fact that there are humans in both of those movies kind of links them in the first place. But yeah.
But don't worry, it just spiraled out of control into a series of comic books and
video
books
games.
And video games and movies.
Somebody was asleep at the wheel for a long time, basically.
Yeah. So
it's like these movies are just printing money. Nothing's gonna go wrong in this industry.
But let's pull it back to this specific outing and say that I actually like this movie in spite of its flaws, and I have a fun time every time I watch it. And there's something kind of new I notice about it every single time, and the thing that I was noticing this time was I had set out to observe the specific time intervals of the unveiling of the Predator and its interaction with everything else in the movie, and also how basically nothing's really going on most of the time. That it's a straightforward, like, you could make this into a TV movie. Like, we're gonna go into South America and, you know, take the people out of this thing because the rebels and stuff, and do this whatever across the border thing, top secret black ops stuff. Like, you could write that as like some sort of a 1980s plot of some kind, but then you graft on the whole alien aspect to it, and it changes it. And that slow unveiling of the alien and its interaction with this other completely different story, makes this pretty interesting to watch.
Yeah, like the modern version of this movie, and again, Alien vs. Predator is basically it, but like, it would be similar in the sense that, you know, they would be out there investigating something, but it would basically be like Predator ship would land in the jungle, and then some, you know, cut to some nondescript like military like room where everyone's looking at computer screens going like, sir, we've got a blip on the thing from a thing and it looks like a weird thing. We better send some guys out to see what it is. And then you send the guys in and they all get killed off or whatever. And I appreciate that this one was like slightly different. Like they got blindsided by the fact that there's this monstrous predator out there killing everyone. They're in there for a different mission, so they think. But
yeah, because it's not about the predator at all.
Yeah, they don't even know it exists.
Yeah, so that's much more interesting than several other different kinds of takes on alien invasion movies that we typically see, where it's like, oh no, there's a thing here, we got to go fight it, and it's like you don't even know it's happening at all. So
this is an alien landing on Earth movie that is killing human beings, and the stakes of this movie are not like, well, if we don't kill it, it's going to destroy the world, which is wonderful. It is an intimate movie between, you know, five or six army dudes and this crazy monstrous predator thing, and that's pretty much the world of this movie contained in this jungle. And if they all die, or they all kill each other, or the predator kills all of them and then leaves, like, there's a good chance no one outside of the group of people that we see on screen would ever know what happened in this jungle ever. And that's kind of a cool premise.
Yeah, nobody would believe him.
Just like meeting Bill Murray. Oh my God, is Bill Murray the predator?
No, definitely not. So we will table further discussions about franchises until at least the next episode, wherein we talk about Predator 2.
Yes. Predator 2. Predator in the big city.
Yep.
Where's that going to take place? Chicago? It's not New York, is it?
I thought it was Los Angeles.
Oh, I just remember like some high-rise buildings. And
yeah, it has like underground stuff, so maybe it is New York. I don't know. It's supposed to also be hot in that movie. I remember that part. I'm like, oh, it's so unseasonably warm in the city. I'm like, great. But
yeah, I remember Danny Glover being sweaty.
Yeah, and do you remember who else is in the movie who also ties the Predator franchise and the Alien franchise together?
Is it Paul Reiser?
Nope.
Then I don't know.
I'll give you a clue. Game over.
Oh, Paxton.
Yeah.
Huh. Who's Paxton?
He's one of we'll save it, but he's a tremendous wardrobe, which I'm sure you will be envious of.
Oh, is it cool?
No. And so we'll go ahead and wrap this up.
Only 3 years later. See, they got on their sequels a little quicker than Alien.
Yeah, well, maybe if they took their time.
Oh, right. Gary Busey's in Predator 2 also. How could I forget? Gary Busey with his hubris and his suits and stuff. We're gonna attack him with guns that shoot cold air.
So,
looking forward to it. It's 1990, but it's still a very 80s movie.
I'm bracing myself for it, and we'll tackle it when we must.
Tune in next time for more Predators than you could possibly handle.
We want people to listen to the show, though.
How great is the ending of Predator 2?
It's very strange.
It's great.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Anyway.
So, we're done now. Goodbye, Dan.
I feel like I should just say goodbye with like a ridiculous cackling laugh and then type some buttons on my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Boop, boop, boop. Now I'm going to blow up.
Okay. I'm ducking right now. You can't see me, but I'm ducking.
Okay. Just I ducked on the outside of a tree.
I ducked.
Good job.